Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 53, recorded May 16th, 2012. Matt Cutts. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get our special offer, visit Stamps.com now. Click the radio microphone and use the offer code Triangulation. And by GoToAssist. With GoToAssist from Citrix, you can take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users, anywhere. Sign up for your free 30-day trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the offer code Triangulation. And by Ford. Giving customers the power of choice with a full line of electric and hybrid electric vehicles. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. It's time for Triangulation, the show where Tom Merritt and I sit down with somebody great, somebody interesting, and pick their brains. Tom Merritt, of course, is here. He is the host of TNT Tech News Today.
Thank you, Leo. I'm very excited.
I got you at 3 o'clock today.
It was perfect.
I'm turning over a new leaf.
Nice.
Get to you at 3 o'clock every Monday through Friday for your latest tech news hit. And we've got a great guest. You want to introduce him?
Sure. Mr. Matt Cutts, who is Mr. Google, as far as I'm concerned.
He is the face of Google.
Yeah. You're the guy that is always responding to me if I have something on Twitter like, hey, why is that the problem? Let me help you out with that. It's great to have you, Matt.
He's frozen solid.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Matt, he's been on probably all of our shows at one time or another. He's responsible for, well, they call him the search quality engineer, but he's really responsible for, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, for keeping spam off their search results.
That's right.
But you're also Google employee number what?
70-something, I think, in the first 100.
Yeah. Is there like a club? Do you get a pin, the first 100 club?
There's not a pin. There is a way where you can check internally and see how many employees at Google are newer than you. So that's kind of fun.
It's probably 48,972 right now or something like that.
Yeah, I'm up toward the 99.9% range at this point.
That's awesome. So. You are the 1%. In a totally different way.
So if you're number 70, what year would that be?
I interviewed in 1999, but I joined in 2000.
I remember having this was when Google was small enough that I remember going to a press event because Google was doing publicity, and Larry and Sergey had like lunch with them, and they gave out little Brio trains that spelled Google. I wish I still had that. I don't know where it went. Probably gave it to one of my kids, not knowing that Google someday might be actually something pretty important in the world.
But now your first job was on the safe search side, is that right?
Yeah, I actually, the very first time I joined Google, a manager came up to me and said, hey, Matt, how do you feel about porn? And I was like, I don't know. Why are you asking me that exactly?
You just used the words feel and porn in a sentence, and I'm not sure how to respond.
I ended up learning a lot of new words working on Safe Search.
I bet you did.
Yeah,
wow.
At one point, I could recognize the word sex in something like 19 languages.
Oh, my God.
But the basic idea was they wanted a family safe version of Google, and so the very first thing I did was try to figure out the word weight so that you could search on Google and not be surprised porn, which that was a bit of an eye opener. Yeah.
So you mean they hired you without a job in mind?
That's right. What they typically do at Google is they look for people who they think are pretty smart. And then they just sort of drop them into the deep end of the pool. And so,
wow.
You know, if you're interested in user interfaces, you might end up working on the front end of something. But they try to find people who can pretty much be universal donors and jump between different groups and projects.
And is that still true with 48,000 people plus?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you'll definitely see someone like hiring an expert for Android and they're a real phone expert. But it's relatively rare for someone to work on the same thing over and over and over again for years and years and years. So the fact that I've worked on spam for 10 or 11 years is relatively rare. A lot of people, you know, every 3 or 4 years, they'll try something new. They'll move to a different project.
And why haven't you switched?
I keep trying to get out, and they keep pulling me back.
You're too good at it.
You're too good at it, exactly.
Well, it is fun. It's a really neat area, because when you start out in the morning, you never know exactly what you'll be working on that day. So,
except you do. Porn.
Well, porn and spam, but you never know exactly what the attack will be. So before this radio show, for example, I was watching a podcast from someone trying to give black hat advice and talk about, you know, don't bother to be real. Here's how to create the illusion of being real. And you're always kind of responding to those threats.
I got one question. I know this is the one question everybody who's watching wants to know. How do I get to number one on Google? Wait a minute. I think there's a video that explains... How do I get, you got that video, Brian? To number one, he didn't get it. There it is.
Matt Cutts here. Hi, everybody. Hello. You know, anybody's welcome to show up. It's a party in here, so. Hi, everybody. Matt Cutts here. Wow, so many questions. We have a fun question today from a billion people
in the Philippines.
Have you seen this, Matt?
Matt, your webmaster help videos are a huge success, and I think
I would imagine it's the first thing you saw this morning.
It's a great help for webmasters. But if one wanted to rank number one, how would you go about doing this? You know, on what basis are the results ranked? Wow, really good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before.
By the way, don't feel bad, Matt. Anybody, they can make a video like this of everybody.
It's a little scary to watch, though.
Very good question. I'm glad you asked us.
Eggs, milk, peanut butter, and vodka condoms? Really, it was a party at Matt's house.
Okay, keyword
that was totally added, yeah.
There's one recipe.
Oh, that wasn't in the original video?
They did some special effects.
And that's just the way it works. The first time you mention a word, you know, hey, that's pretty interesting. It's about that word. The next time you mention that word, it's still about that word. And once you start to mention it a whole lot, then that might help with your ranking. Absolutely. What is the ideal
keyword stuffing?
The answer is 77%.
That's fake, too. Yeah.
It's on the page as many times
scary
as
things,
possible.
I talked to the guy who made this video, and he spent two or three days making the video, and I'm like, they're really not that interesting, you know? They're good to watch.
This is a brilliant video. Are you kidding? It's the funniest thing ever. His name is Sam Applegate, and he's actually an SEO consultant.
Nice Aperture Science t-shirt, by the way.
That's a little... I do throw inside jokes in every so often. I am a fan of the portal, so...
Who's awesome. Not, yeah. After all? So, it's very funny, and everybody should watch the full thing. Sam did a very funny job with it. But none of the advice in that video at all is accurate, I think.
Well, it's sort of the opposite advice,
yeah.
Right?
They pretty much tried to do the opposite in that video. And it is funny because the video's gotten 20,000 plus views. So, you know, he's gotten some attention for it.
Matt, but, brace yourself. It'll be 1 million in a week.
Oh, dear.
You might as well. You're going to be, in fact, 5 years from now, you're going to get email from somebody saying, hey, did you ever see that video? I swear to God.
Yeah, well, and we've seen people do infographics where they actually graphed how many different colors of the t-shirts I was wearing. So.
Those are from the webmaster videos that you do that are actually really, really good.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I used to participate on forums as this anonymous Google employee called Google Guy, and that worked for a while, and then I said, okay, I'll have my own blog, and it turns out blogs are a real bear to write; they're a pain.
Yeah.
So I sort of came around to video, which you know is a truth that you've known forever, but the fact that we can tape like 8 hours of video and make something like 60 or 70 videos in one day. And answer just a ton of questions. So
wait a minute. You mean all those t-shirts? You're changing t-shirts every 5 minutes?
Yes. Yes. Every 5 or 6 videos, I bring like 12 t-shirts and I swap out different shirts.
If you look closely, some of them he's wearing 18 shirts because he just pulls them off after each.
The magic is gone. I'm so sad to hear that. Go ahead.
The first round we did, we taped all the videos with
by the
one
way,
red.
I load. Love the bald Matt Cutts right in the middle there.
Yeah, I lost a bet on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the bet?
The bet was basically when we get a spam report, I'll bet we can have a certain turnaround time on the team of addressing that spam report. And I said, I'll bet you can't do it to within this time frame for an entire quarter, and they did, and so they got they shaved my head off. But
that
then
was
what
that was worth it.
Is my wife really liked it?
No, she your wife liked it.
She really enjoyed it. So I had to go bald for like a year or so.
Oh, that's not a good bet to lose. I mean, I thought that was a good result, but
how'd you convince her to let you grow your hair back?
Oh dear.
I think at some point she said, "Okay, it's been long enough. Let's get back."
The novelty has worn off.
My mom was horrified. She hated that look.
But you're so cute, man. Why would you do that?
She's a great
mom.
You
have such lovely hair.
That's exactly what she'd say. So.
That's what my mom would say.
We did tape like 50 videos with the red polo shirt, and by the end of it, everybody was like, okay, if he wears one more red polo shirt, I'm going to like tear things apart. So that's why we switch shirts every few videos.
We're talking to Google employee, what was it, 70, 78?
71.
71.
Like
Matt Cutts, he's in charge of keeping the junk out of the search results. It is, you know, there's a great video, and I hope Google does more of this, of one of your meetings at which somebody is pitching an idea about a change in the algorithm, and you're there, and it's just a wonderful video to watch how you work. So we're going to talk about that. I'd love to ask you about your 20% projects, and I'm going to definitely ask you what we don't know about Matt Cutts, because we know so much, but there's got to be. So I'm going to give you a warning, fair warning, Matt. I want to ask you for five things we don't know about you.
Okay.
And I expect to be shocked, amazed, and surprised. I get a third word. I don't know. Something.
Censored.
Censored.
Safe searched.
Two words. Vodka, condoms. Okay? That's all I'm saying. We'll be back with more with Matt Cutts on Triangulation. Tom Merritt, too. I want to tell you, though, this show brought to you by our good friends at Stamps.com. Please stop going to the post office. The post office doesn't need your business. In fact, that's why they set up Stamps.
They need your business. They just don't need
they
you.
Don't need you
show
in,
up at
that's
the
right.
building.
They want your good, very important distinction. The post office wants your business. They just don't want to see you. Now, that's wrong, too.
Yeah.
Stamps, the reason they set up Stamps.com is because it turns out you could do everything. I mean, everything, except for Mac on that cute clerk in aisle three. But everything other than that, you could do at the post office. You could do at your desk. With Stamps.com. And Mac or a PC, you go to Stamps.com and print official U.S. postage right from your computer and your printer. No special inks, no postage meter. I don't know. You know, the folks at Pitney Bowes must hate this. I don't even know why people buy postage meters or rent them. You actually don't buy it. You rent it. And they charge it up. It's really an arcane system. Not Stamps.com. Very simple. In fact, they even send you, for free, a USB scale. You plug into the computer. You throw your letter or your package on it. It tells you exactly, you always have exactly the right postage, even when rates change. You never have to buy stamps again. You put these, and by the way, the stamps are great looking. You can customize them for your business. And then the mail carrier comes and gets it. He takes it. You can even schedule free pickups. So if it's a lot of packages, you know who should be using this? Is anybody who sells through eBay or Amazon or sites like that. If you're an eBay or Amazon seller, Stamps.com will actually fill out the forms for you. They actually interface with the software and make it really easy for you. In fact, Stamps.com has a plan for the heavy users, people who send, I think it's more than something like $500 a month. It's free. I mean, not the postage, but Stamps.com. There's no service charge. So it's, I mean, I can go on and on. There's discounts you can't get at the post office on both Priority and Express Mail. International forms are filled out. Everything. Here's how you take advantage of this offer. You go to Stamps.com. Do not take the $80 value. Click the radio microphone up in the upper right-hand corner. Enter Triangu, spell it right, T-R-I-A-N-G-U-L-A-T-I-O-N. And then that $80 value goes to $110 value because you get more free postage. $55 in postage coupons, a free digital scale I mentioned. You pay the shipping handling on the scale. A $5 supply kit, four-week trial. $110 value, and all you have to do is use the offer code Triangulation. If you haven't tried this yet, hey, do the free trial. Why not? Just see what it can do. Stamps.com. Thank you so much for your support of Triangulation, Stamps.com. Matt Cutts is with us. Mr. Google. We recalled him, and it's better now, yes?
Cool.
Good. All right. They're thanking you in the chat room for your regular appearances on This Week in Google, and we do appreciate it to get it straight from Google. You must have a special relationship because if a lot of the engineers we ask, they have to say, oh, I have to get permission. But you just say anytime. Do you have some sort of special deal?
Well, normally people are, the PR folks are pretty okay, just because I've put my foot in my mouth enough in the early days that I know not what to do now.
You know what not to say.
Yeah. But every so often, if something's a really delicate topic, I'll double check with PR just to be safe.
Right. And you're good about, what I like about it is you're very good about being forthright. And when you can't talk, you just say, you know, I can't talk about that, or it's not in my bailiwick. But more than most, you're not a corporate spokesman, but more than most corporate spokesmen, you're very straight with everybody. I think that's why you're beloved in the community.
Yeah, I think one of the great examples of that was with the Google quality violation with the Google Chrome page, which was a tricky situation back in January. And I thought you handled that really well, explaining, you know, you aren't going to give yourself special treatment.
That was kind of amazing. In fact, when we discussed it on Twig, we thought you guys went overboard. Google punished itself, in effect, for violating its own precepts. And you actually punished yourself more than you would, I think, others. Did you actually go farther than you would have gone? Uh-oh, we've lost Matt's.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm here. I think Google needs to hold itself to the same or higher standards than we'd hold anybody else. And so we were probably just a little bit more strict on that Chrome incident, just because we need to set a very clear precedent. You know, when people expect us to do a good job for users, they have high expectations of us. And for example, in my role, to be able to say to other companies or to other websites, hey, here are the rules and they apply, you know, across the board, we need to make sure that we apply them to ourselves as well. Right. I think I wasn't the most favorite person for a few people on the Chrome team that week. So
Matt,
I haven't gotten any new...
Matt, what are you doing?
I can understand.
You're killing me.
I haven't gotten the latest Chromebook, you know, prototype success or anything like that. But I think, you know, people understood the need for it, and you need to set that good example. And so hopefully that's what we did.
Do you feel like you're you must feel like you're in some way the keeper of something very precious that is important to a billion people worldwide, right?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the reason I stay at Google is because I believe in what we're doing, and I think it's a really important mission. The first time I heard, you know, organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful, it kind of takes you back with how ambitious it is. And there's certainly been a few incidents. I remember when I was a kid, you know, I was a little kind of wannabe hacker a little bit. And so one day at university, I accidentally messaged everyone on campus. And my dad was a physics professor on the campus. And he sort of gave me a talking to and said, look, you know, I've spent a long time building up my reputation here at this university. And so you really shouldn't just drag that through the mud or anything. And I think with a lot of Googlers and old-time Googlers and even the newer Googlers, they feel that way. They feel like if somebody is besmirching the company's reputation or doing something that could be possible, then there's loud, acrimonious debate inside of Google trying to say, okay, what's the right thing? How do we fix this? And just because Google might not say that much externally, even about hot topics, you know, China or whatever, doesn't mean that we're not having a really frank, honest discussion internally, which I think is important. You need everybody to feel like they can push that red button if Google's doing something wrong and say, look, I don't believe in this. I think something's gone off the tracks here.
You probably suffer a lot of slings and arrows from all sides of the ideological spectrum when things suddenly fall down in rank. I mean, we see these stories all the time. Google changed the algorithm, and now there's a prejudice against this type of site because suddenly it's fallen down in rank. And the thing is, every time you change an algorithm, something is going to fall down and something's going to rise up. How do you deal with that? How do you prepare for that? And how do you explain to those communities that you're not going after them?
Yeah, it's a tough question, because it is true that anytime it's a zero-sum game. Anytime somebody moves up in the rankings, somebody else moves down. But only the people who move down ever say anything or really complain. Very few people volunteer, woohoo, I'm doing much better in Google. Part of the way to address that is to get ahead of the problem. Like, one of the biggest misconceptions I've seen is, earlier this week, somebody said, I'm a conservative blogger, and Google marked me as spam, and therefore Google hates conservative bloggers, and they're not welcome on Blogspot. When, in fact, it was a false positive in the spam detection on Blogspot. And so we've done a blog post that says, look, politics and being partisan in our search results, that's anathema to us. We need to be, you know, the sort of company that people can trust with their search results. And so, no, it's the Voltaire quote, right? We might not agree with something that somebody says, but we're going to defend to you, the death, your right to say it. And so we try to set out clear guidelines and explain them well and say, look, the reasons why somebody moved would be for spam or for legal reasons, that sort of thing.
And in this case, it was a mistake. They got flagged for spam, and they weren't spam. But that brings out the conspiracy theorists all of a sudden. They're like, aha, see, you're trying to silence us. But how do you explain that mistakes just happen, you know?
Yeah, it is tricky because any algorithm that operates on the web can't be perfect. You know, you've got 200 million domain names. And so if you've got something that's 99.999% accurate, you're still going to have, you know, tons of false positives because one in a million, that happens 200 times across domain names. So I think we try to, you know, communicate very clearly that we know we're not perfect, but our test when we roll out any new algorithm or change has to be, does it make things better? Do things improve? Not do we get every single instance of spam or is it completely fixed now?
Can you get that 4 nines to 5 nines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and if you think about 5 nines of availability in Gmail, that would be like 4 minutes of downtime a year, you know, or a few seconds. It's like to get that level of reliability is really, really tough. But then the flip side is you need to try to have your ears open and listen for false positives or mistakes and look for ways to correct that, whether it was a manual mistake or whether it was an algorithmic problem.
It must be hard not to get frozen because yes, you are a keeper. It's very important what you're doing. And any little change that you make impacts so many people and can have unintended consequences. I'm sure you do things all the time that have unintended consequences, but you can't let that stop you. How do you keep moving forward? I know you probably don't have trouble, but I bet your engineers sometimes have to get pepped. What do you tell them to keep them going?
The beauty of working at Google is you really know that you make a difference, you know, sometimes it's search features like a great project called, Knowledge Graph. And then people can see, you know, there's an actual user interface that's new and different.
That just came out, by the way, and it's very intriguing. Yeah.
Yeah. You can search for Leo Laporte. And by the way, it'll show you people who search for Leo Laporte also search for, and it had Tom Merritt right there. And you
Isn't
can click
cool?
and you can oh, find out
sense.
Facts. So it's a really handy feature. But even the engineers in search quality know, even if you don't make a visible feature change, you're still making the search results better for, you know, hundreds, billions of people as they do their searches. So there's a very strong sense of purpose. It is tough because you hear complaints and you want to be able to help with every complaint. But when you have 2 billion users and 200 million domain names, you just can't do user support like you would with a regular company where you paid $500, you know, for some consumer electronics.
So Google's famous for its 20% projects. Every employee is kind of, I assume, expected to or asked to spend one day a week working on a personal project. Many of these, by the way, have made it into Google products. So it's not something that's time that's wasted. What kinds of things what are you doing right now for your 20%?
So typically my 20% would be communication. So making these videos that we do.
That counts,
Blog posts, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I've certainly worked on, like, one fun 20% project was trying to index words based on how they sound, not based on how they're spelled. So if somebody doesn't know how to spell Tom Merritt with two R's or two T's or that sort of thing, you know, you want to be able to still find that. And that was just something that, you know, you can do a very fun, easy, fast experiment on. One of the best things about working on Google is you can have an idea and you can process our entire index, which is a fair fraction of the web, in just a few hours. So having thousands of machines at your disposal is not something that happens at most regular.
It's one of the things I actually think that makes Google a really great experience. If you're a bad speller, I just searched for Tom Merritt with one R and one T, and it says showing results for Tom Merritt with two R's and two T's. I don't know if that's the thing you were doing. Is that what you were doing? Did that get incorporated in?
Well, I was working on a prototype. Now the people that do spell check and those kinds of things do much more sophisticated analysis. You can do things like if you type Sterling Engine versus Sterling Silver, it will actually look at the context and be able to figure out Stirling engine should be with an I and Stirling silver should be with an E. And so, you know, it's pretty amazing to be able to look at all the different contexts and try to figure out intelligently what are people really looking for.
I know a lot of people, including my son, who aren't great spellers, who will type something into Google to get the spelling. And Google, more often than not, will give the correct spelling. It's really a sophisticated, amazing system, I have to say.
Now, Bing does that sort of thing, too.
Well, Bing copies everything Google does.
But they're just scraping your results. No, I'm just kidding. But the knowledge graph is one of the things where I think you're farther ahead as far as being able to say, you know, we're not just doing a little bit of spell check, a little correction. Right. There's a lot of people have caught up in those areas, but we're... It's not quite semantic search, but it's sort of emulating semantic search.
So if you search for a name, it will pull up additional information on the right-hand column that, you know, Wikipedia entries, things like that. You recently launched Search Plus Your World, which you and I have kind of gone back and forth about. I'm kind of dubious still, but Bing obviously wasn't, because today, a couple of days ago, they launched basically an exact thing. The difference, though, and I'm curious what you think of this, is that Google uses Google Plus for all the social signals. It's adding social signals to search. And Bing is using Facebook and Twitter. They're not using Google Plus.
I thought they were using Google Plus.
Maybe they are.
I did read that in one article.
Okay. So they're using a broader variety of signals. That seems like an advantage.
Well, and the tricky thing is, and the beauty of the open web is, you know, when Google built a search engine, anyone can crawl the web. Anyone can still crawl the web. And you see little new search engines like Blecko that say, okay, we're going to crawl the open web and we're going to make our own search engine. We're going to compete with Google. And I think that's fantastic. It keeps everybody on their own toes. An issue with somebody like Facebook is it's more like a private forum. And so you might be on Facebook and might want your content to show up in Google, but unless Facebook allows us to crawl or to have access to that data, we can't easily make it searchable. So I think the vision that I would like to have is, you know, if you've seen it before, if it's been in your browser, if you've run across it anywhere on the web, you should be able to search and find it. But, you know, there are some pockets of the web that are closer to private forums, and then if they don't let us crawl,
right,
or if they don't give us access to the data, then we can't do as comprehensive of a job as we would like, and we would certainly like to have that data so that we can search it for users. But it's one of these things where it takes two to tango. You know, we won't right, index or crawl websites if they don't let us.
In fact, that's a real frustration with Instagram. Instagram uses robots.txt to block Google. You cannot search Instagram for pictures. Because they want you to go through Instagram, I guess.
There's an argument to be made with Facebook that they're trying to protect private information.
Yeah,
and that's
they
a
sold
big
it to
deal.
Microsoft.
Well, yeah, but that's a big deal with Facebook. You have to log in on Facebook Bing for that to work.
Right.
So they're not exposing your private information.
Right.
I think something like Twitter is a different situation where everything you put on Twitter is public.
It's all public.
Why can't you just go scrape Twitter without their permission? Can you explain what you're not getting? That you get when you get the fire hose?
Sure. I'll certainly give it a shot. The basic idea is we are able to crawl pages and tweets show up at a certain, you know, fire hose volume, and we're not able to crawl via the web crawl fast enough to get a very comprehensive copy of Twitter.
Gotcha.
I think we have certainly had trouble in the past at being able to crawl the Twitter website. So that's one of those issues where, you know, we're very good at web crawling and we're very good at crawling comprehensively. But in some cases, you know, if a site doesn't want to have us or blocks us, then that's something that, you know, can definitely introduce a wrinkle into the situation.
And yell at Twitter, not yell at Google in this case. And actually, that's one of the things I've always had a problem with Twitter, Facebook, and others, is they're a silo. They're not. How involved are you with Google Plus? Do you? It's not in your department, of course.
Yeah, it's not in my department. I use Google Plus, so I plussed that I was going to be on Triangulation in a few minutes, and I'm a little surprised that it's growing on me more than I expected. You know, when I started to use Twitter at first, I was like, "What's this for?
Right.
I don't get it."
Right.
You know, it took a few months for me to sort of, you know, really enjoy using Twitter, and I'm finding that Google Plus is nice for when you want to have that conversation that gets a little bit meatier. And so I am enjoying that quite a bit. They've got some nice features.
I definitely use Google Plus for something where I'm asking a question or wanting to have a conversation or debate a point. It's good for that. But you hear all of these criticisms that it's a ghost town because I think a lot of people, and I was talking to Sarah Lane about this earlier, a lot of people are reading it but not interacting with it. They're sort of, they've gotten out of the habit of starting those conversations and start and asking those questions. How do you get them back into that? And again, I know this isn't your area, but just, you know.
Yeah. No, I'll take a shot at it. I think one of the reasons why it might be a ghost town is if you're looking for, you know, a friend that you know is on Twitter or Facebook who might not be participating on Google Plus, and that's their call, of course. There are really great people hanging out, you know, on Google Plus.
I think that's exactly it.
Yeah, so yeah. I think part of the answer is to give people a little bit of a warm welcome where they say, hey, look, here are 100 people that you might want to follow that are really interesting, you know, cool photographs or, you know, funny pictures every day, that sort of thing. And then people realize, oh, there is a lot of activity. It's just like with Twitter. Until you start following the right people, it, you know, Twitter would look pretty empty as well if you were only following one or two people.
I added the Scoble 500 list.
Yeah. Gets pretty active pretty fast.
Hey, Google Plus looks like it's incredibly lively right now.
But it is exactly what Matt said, which is it's if your friends aren't on it, then you say, well, it's a ghost town. If they're not using it, but certainly there are people, there are millions of people using it. Google's in an interesting position, and you don't have to comment on this if you don't want to. This is becoming now a Google interview, not a Matt Cutts interview. I didn't want
to
do that.
Yeah, we need to steer it back.
But I might as well ask this because I've been kind of critical. Google is really doing great stuff. They're creating a lot of new things. This Hangouts Live is fantastic. You know, Google Plus, YouTube. There's a lot of great stuff going on. It's all being integrated together now with the Google Bar. But it's not search. And I almost feel like Google, it's mixing church and state, that Google should be the church. It's pure search. Let others be in these other businesses. I understand they're good businesses. How do you feel about that? I mean, you've watched Google go from being a search company to being a search plus ads company to being a Google Docs, Google Plus, Google, to being a many, many things.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think there's a lot of facets to it. One is, you know, I don't think anybody who's a regular Gmail user would ever want to give up Gmail.
No, it's not that you're not making great products. Let me be clear about that.
Right, right. And you know, the tough thing is, usually when people say that, oh, maybe it's, I wish the Google Plus wouldn't show up, you know, via Search Plus Your World or something like that.
Right.
But there are a lot of products, like my brother, he works as a mechanical engineer, and his company just switched from Lotus Notes to Google Apps.
Thank God.
And he's like, you might not have heard of this thing called the cloud, but it's fantastic. We open up a Google Doc, and we can all collaborate at the same time. Oh, it's so cool. You know, and so I do think there are a lot of fantastic things that Google does. I think the principle that...
And please don't misunderstand me, Matt. I use them all and love them all. I love Google Voice. I can go on and on. That's not what I'm saying. But you understand what I'm saying.
I think I do. And I think what people want to know is if they come to Google and they do a search, do they get the best search results?
Exactly.
Do they get results that they can trust?
Exactly.
And I think that trust is a responsibility that we feel very strongly about.
Exactly. You have to live to a higher standard. People say, well, Apple does it. Of course, many other companies do that. But when you are the keeper of the search, in many ways, you're the keeper of the internet. You can't find what you need.
Well, you can always go straight to sites. You can use Twitter. You can use Facebook.
How do you find them?
There are other search engines that work. You know, there are people who run tests and they're like, I tried Blecko for 30 days and it worked fine for me. But I think that doesn't change your point. And I think your point is dead on, that people need to feel like they can trust that we're going to return really relevant search results.
Yes.
So, for example, after Search Plus Your World, a few people said, oh, I see too much Search Plus Your World, or it triggers too often, or I got this irrelevant result. And it's safe to say that we were reading every piece of feedback like that. And we've made it trigger less often. We've made it more relevant. We've looked at ways where, you know, maybe the stuff shows up on the right-hand side rather than in the search results. And so I think this is a completely new product, even when you've tested it internally and know exactly how the outside world is going to receive it. But I think it's absolutely the case that we take that incredibly seriously and try to figure out, okay, what's the right balance? How do we figure out, you know, what people are interested in? Because if you type in, you know, a rare word, you probably want a dictionary result. You know, and trying to guess that intent correctly all the time is really tricky.
But if I interpret your question correctly, how does self-driving cars, how does Google Plus, how do these more peripheral things
feed into search? It's not so much how. I mean, that's up to Google as a business to whether they want to do all these things. My feeling, though, is I wish they wouldn't. And the best example for me is YouTube, so because I'm a content creator. And so it's pretty clear, you might deny this, Matt, and you're welcome to, that YouTube shows up very well in Google search. But it is a Google product. That raises issues, whether it's not intentional, that raises issues of, does Google play favorites with its own products? These issues would not come up if Google stuck to search.
That's a fair question. I think a Wired reporter asked two or three, actually several years ago, and said, look, doesn't YouTube show up too often? And so I went to the relevant ranking people and I said, you know, hey, with the triggering for YouTube videos, you know, how sure are we that that's fair in some sense? And the people in charge of that scoring and that triggering said, you know what, given the amount of videos on YouTube and the amount of people who use YouTube, and, you know, if you cross compare with other sites like Vimeo or whatever, they said, we actually bend over backwards to try to make sure that we show other sites. So I do take the point, and I think that that either criticism or potential loss of trust.
Think of it as a caution. Caution, not a criticism. And we don't have the greatest connection with Matt, which makes it difficult. But so I apologize. But you're reassuring me, because what you're saying is, no, we understand the potential conflict of interest here, and we bend over backwards to avoid it.
Well, yes, and I also think the last several months have really driven that point home. You know, I think after Search Plus Your World, a lot of people were like, okay, Google, you need to prove to me that you know, we can trust you. And I think we need to make sure that we earn that trust every single day, and we realize that we have that responsibility.
Good.
Well, Google Videos section was at one point sort of a store for Google Videos, and it was a Google Video upload service pre-YouTube. And then when they bought YouTube, then they kind of rolled YouTube into that video. And I think for a long time, all you got when you were in videos was either Google Video or YouTube, because it wasn't very good yet as a subsection of search. And I think that has colored the interpretation of, well, Google favors YouTube, not because the main search necessarily comes up with YouTube more often, but that Google Video section of search is just now getting to the point where it actually is encompassing most of the videos on the internet.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and double check that, because that's a different area of search, but we definitely want to be inclusive. I think we want to be inclusive of as much data as people are willing to provide, you know. And so, you know, we'd love to be able to surface a lot of stuff from different websites, but I'm not exactly sure what happened with video search on Google, because I had the impression it could return results from across the web, not just from video.
It does now. I'm talking about like 2005, 2006. Okay. It was Google had a video upload service of its own, but when they bought YouTube, they ended up saying, well, we don't need that anymore.
And in fact, it's now going away.
Yeah, and then Google Video became video search. But it's taken a while to catch up as a subsection, I feel like.
We do have you on an auspicious day, which is the launch of this knowledge graph. And I hate to keep asking you about Google. We'll ask you some about that. But I want to take a break. And when we come back, five things no one knows about Matt Cutts. I know one. I shouldn't know it.
But I do know one.
And I'll find more in just a bit. But first, a word about a brand new product from our good friends at Citrix, GoToAssist. And you may say, wait a minute, Leo, they've had GoToAssist for a long time. Yeah, GoToAssist, which was the remote support, but now they've added to GoToAssist remote monitoring as well. They were going to call this GoToManage, because it's really about managed service providers. But I think they were wise to say, well, we everybody knows GoToAssist, so we're going to keep that name. But I just want to tell you, if you haven't checked out GoToAssist in the last couple of weeks, please go visit the website, GoToAssist.com. They've always had the best remote support for IT professionals. Now they're adding this monitoring solution that is fantastic. It really is a big part of your business. Think about it. You want to fix stuff, sure, but before you fix stuff, you also, by the way, the promo code if you want to try it free is triangulation. You also, before you fix stuff, you also want to do it proactively. In other words, You don't want to wait for your client, your support person, to call you and say, hey, the hard drive's full. What you want to do is be monitoring and proactively fix these things. Then you look like a support wizard. Then you look like somehow he's magically, everything's running great ever since we hired Russell Tammany. And that's what this can do for you. In fact, that's what Russell does. Russell's an amazing story. He's a consultant for us, our IT guy. We gave him GoToAssist. He said, I love it. Russell uses three people to handle 855 different companies. And you can do it too. You can become a managed service provider as an IT person by using the right tools. And the remote access, the remote monitoring, it's amazing. He knows before we do, when the toner cartridge is about to run out, a hard drive's about to fail or is full, when a computer's not running up to stuff, when there's a virus, they can monitor everything. And it is truly an amazing product. I want you to visit GoToAssist. You probably already know about the remote support, best, fastest in the business, using that great remote back end that Citrix provides, even for unattended computers. But also the monitoring module, which works across all operating systems to let you monitor server health, to manage inventory, including not just PCs and Macs and network equipment, but printers, everything. Network tracking, so you know, for instance, if you've got congestion on your network, where to fix it, where to solve the problems. Alerts that will let you know, even via email, instant messenger, or SMS. I mean, this is completely, by the way, customizable dashboards with your company logo on everything. So don't worry. You're going to get the credit for this. They're going to say, wow, you're the best. You can just say, yeah, I know what I'm doing here. Go to assist.com. Try it free for 30 days. Remote support plus now the best monitoring in the business. It is truly incredible. As usual, with the great folks at Citrix, they just keep adding features, no extra charge. You just get it automatically. If you're already a Go to Assist customer, you got this, check it out. Go to assist.com. The offer code to try it free for 30 days, triangulation. Matt Cutts is our guest. Matt is the man in charge of keeping spam off search results, employee 71 at Google. And I'll give you a fact no one knows about Matt Cutts. He used to be a fat SOB.
That was one of my facts, yes.
How much did you weigh?
I weighed, I think, 220. So at one point, I lost 40 pounds.
Everybody went. So yeah, if you didn't know Matt before, I mean, really, there was a massive. How did you do that?
So it was kind of funny because I had been sedentary for many years. You know,
worked
on the computer.
Yeah,
I was a geek, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And I kind of hurt my back a little bit, and. One of the Google co-founders, I won't say which one, you know, sort of joked to somebody else, well, if he lost a few pounds, maybe it wouldn't hurt his back.
Ooh, that's not good. That hurts.
You know, and sometimes that can motivate you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I just decided, okay, I'm going to try to be a little bit more healthy. And I'll tell you the secret. Get your laptop and find an elliptical machine and find a way to put the laptop on the elliptical machine.
Wow.
Because if you think about it, you probably surf an hour or two a day on the web, or you do email for an hour or two or three on the web. And if you just at a very slow pace or even at a faster pace, just do a little bit of elliptical or, you know, treadmill or something, the weight will drop off by itself.
I know some people who actually have treadmills at their desk, under their desk, and they just walk the whole time, all the time.
Yeah, they've got some walk stations at Google. They have they take good care of us. They have nap pods and all that kind of thing.
Of course, everybody in the chat wants to know how tall you are now that you said your weight.
240.
Oh, 5'10".
Okay. My height.
There you go.
I never got that high, but I'm close.
240 or 220?
220.
Oh, 220.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So no, that's nothing.
Well, a pound for every volt.
The nice thing is I'd go to these search conferences and people wouldn't see me for 3 months and they'd be like, what happened to you? This is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then last year I ended up running a marathon.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Matt, well done.
Okay. Congratulations.
All right. That's one. Another fact no one knows about Matt Cutts.
Okay, when I was in college, I interned with the Department of Defense, and so I had a top secret clearance at one point.
He has a top secret clearance.
Now, is top secret as cool as it sounds, or is it? I've had military people say, "Well, top secret really isn't that big a deal. I have above top secret or whatever." Are they just BSing?
I think top secret is as high as it goes, and then after that you have keywords and specific projects.
Yeah, top secret is
then you're
top.
Like a joint chief.
It's the top.
Yeah.
I'm sure other people have much, much, you know, more interesting stuff.
That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. It was a pretty fun internship, yeah.
No kidding. That's when the FBI comes to family and friends and says, what do you know about this Cuts kid?
Is he patriotic?
Is he okay? He's not a commie. Yeah.
They actually run a background check on you, and you do a polygraph and all that stuff.
Wow. You're that's like, good.
I only have traffic tickets.
And what were you doing for the DOD?
It was one of these things where you would internship for a semester and then go and work for a, you know, do college for a semester and then work for a semester. So the nice thing is you do a different project every time you rotated in. So you could see different parts of the organization.
You were a computer science major?
I got a degree in both computer science and math.
So you're a computer science major, but you also got a degree in computer science.
Okay. Very important distinction.
Should I ever want to become a CEO?
No fudging here. That was at Kentucky, and then you got a graduate degree, yes?
Yeah, I got a master's at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Cool.
And I was working on my PhD, had everything done except for the dissertation, and then like many Google employees, I skipped on the PhD to join Google.
Matt Cutts, ABD. That's what we'll call him. Okay, that's two. You don't have to give us five. Give us one more. No one knows about Matt Cutts. I like Top Secret. That's good.
Yeah.
That was fun. I have been doing these 30-day challenges, so not everybody knows about
that. Tell us about those, because that's kind of cool.
It's a lot of fun. The idea is you try on a new habit for 30 days. A 30,000 steps a day. And so I still have 2,500 to do today. And some of them don't stick at all, but you just try on a new habit, like not watching TV or, you know, biking into work for a month. And it's a ton of fun. You pick up some great habits and you drop a few bad habits and you just do different things. It's a great way to see whether you enjoyed something. So I highly recommend it.
The premise being if you do anything for 30 days, it will become a habit.
Won't feel daunted like I have to do this for the rest of my life. It's just for 30 days. It gets you to try it. I like that too.
Give us one, Matt. What's your favorite one that you did that we should all try?
It was the one that I would recommend is 10,000 steps a day because it's doable.
Yep.
And you might find out that you really enjoy taking a walk after work to cool down and calm down. One of the harder ones for me was giving up sugar for 30 days.
That's like Lent.
Yeah.
It's worse than Lent.
That was tricky.
Yeah.
Or go vegan for 30 days. Those are kind of hard.
That's interesting.
That's good.
Yeah.
Just to see if you like it, if you can do it.
So, Downclimb says in our chat room, there was a logical flaw in your 30-day challenge in February. I don't even know what it was.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to look up what my 30-day challenge for February was.
Downclimb, what was his 30-day challenge? Do you publish this on a blog? Is that how he knows what your challenge was?
Yeah. Normally, I publish it either on Google+, or I have a tag on my blog that's 30-day challenges, so 30 days. And you can read all the different stuff I do.
And in March, you said no news for 30 days. I don't even know how you did your job without that.
That was a ton of fun. It turns out if something's important enough, people will mention it to you.
You can't have a 30-day challenge in February. There's only 28 or 29 days.
Oh, I get it. It was a 28-day challenge. I get it.
It was a leap year.
So it was a 29-day challenge.
Okay,
right.
Okay. Draw something every day. I love that one. That's cool. Look at that. That's skinny Matt Cutts in his Kentucky shirt. Was that Movember you were growing that mustache for?
That's right, yep.
And the newspaper is to prove that you're actually doing it?
Well, I did something. I grew my mustache for a week to see whether I could, you know, to see if it was horribly ugly.
Yeah.
And I took a picture before I shaved it off, and then I took a picture after I shaved it off. And so I had this these two pictures side by side from November 1st, and it looked like I'd grown a mustache in an hour. And to this day, there are people who leave comments like, I don't understand.
How?
It's the same day, and then you have a mustache in an hour. This is crazy.
Matt, you've got to tell us the secret. one-hour mustache. Man, he's hairy.
Boy, that's believe everything you read on the internet.
His new 99-cent Kindle book, 1 Hour Mustache, will be out soon.
I want to. We're talking to Matt Cutts from Google. We're going to take a break and come back with more Tom Merritt, Leo Laporte triangulation. I do want to ask a little bit about this knowledge graph because I gather this is a big deal. But anything else we can come up with, we're getting down up close and personal with the Cut Man. Matt Cutts. More in a bit, but first, a word about electric. You know, this is something Google's really into. In fact, I remember we went over to see the Google electric vehicle. I guess his program was shut. Larry shut this down as one of the boondoggles, but this was really cool. Do you still have the electric vehicles on campus and all of that?
Yeah.
Oh, they do. Oh, good.
Certainly, they have, like, charging stations.
There's charging stations everywhere, I know.
Yeah.
I love that. So this is the future, right? Zero emissions. These engines are very efficient, very reliable. You never have to do an oil change again. You get amazing torque. I think sometimes people think, oh, a fuel-efficient car. Oh, gosh, it won't be any fun to drive. Are you kidding? You can bend your head to the seat if you want. Not that I'm recommending that. The new Ford Focus Electric is here, the 2012. I've been waiting. I actually was on the waiting list. I was over at Henry Curtis Ford today, our local Ford dealer, doing my Mustang. And I said, EV certified? Yes, soon. The EV certified dealers will have the Focus. Go test drive one. You're going to be amazed. First of all, the most fuel efficient 5-passenger vehicle in America. The best city rating in its class, 110 MPGe. That's the equivalent of miles per gallon. 110 MPGe. Best-in-class driving range. Get this, 76 miles range. There's nothing like that. And the best-in-class 240-volt charge time. If you put the charger in there, which is what they have at Google, 4 hours. So if you decide to go home at lunch, no problem. Just take off. That's half the time it takes to charge the next most popular electric vehicle. It's really impressive. The 2013, early next year, 2013 Ford Fusion Energy will be a plug-in hybrid, energy with an I, and that's going to have an efficiency rating of 100 miles per gallon E. So we're talking really amazing stuff. Of course, they've updated the My Ford Touch and the Ford Sync to give you things like you can get the most eco-friendly route as well as the shortest and fastest. It'll let you remotely control vehicle charge and preconditioning settings with your app on the iPhone or the Android phone. It has this value charging feature powered by Microsoft that lets you say to the car, charge when it's cheapest, and it will actually go and say, oh, that would be, you know, 2 to 4 a.m. in your area, and it does that. So it saves you money that way, too. These things are super smart, really cool. I mean, if you're a geek, this is the ultimate technology. I want you to check it out. Good for the Earth and good for you, the Ford Focus Electric. Drive one at a Ford dealer near you or find out more at Ford.com/technology. And see, now I'm torn because I wanted the electric, but now I'm looking at the energy. I'm thinking, I can wait maybe. I can drive my fuel inefficient Mustang for a little bit longer, and then in January I'll make it up. It'll be like I'm going to have pizza for another year, and then
you need a 30-day challenge this week.
And then I'll drive electric for the rest of my life to pay for it. Matt Cutts sees, you know, Matt. Even Matt sees the foolishness in my thinking. Matt Cutts is with us. So tell us about what. I don't think anybody's doing this. What is knowledge graph? I mean, we've talked about. So there was search, and then the latest hot thing is first it was to add location. So if I search for pizza, I'll find pizza in my neighborhood. That was really cool, and that did it kind of automatically. And then the next thing was, okay, now you might want to kind of curry comb and polish up the search results with social information. Looking for a movie, what did my buddy Tom Merritt think of that movie? That's more information. But I don't know if anybody's talked about this knowledge graph. This is kind of out of nowhere. What is it, and how does it change what search does?
Sure. It's kind of interesting because we've renamed ourselves about a year ago from search quality to knowledge to sort of reflect the fact that our group wants to move from just data, you know, to sort of data plus insights, the sort of knowledge that eventually could give wisdom. And so trying to understand what a user types is really difficult. If they type York, well, they clearly want somewhere, you know, across the Atlantic.
Right.
If they type New York, then they might want the city, they might want the state. If they type New York Times, then they probably want the newspaper. If they type New York Times Square, what exactly do they mean? And so trying to understand not just the keywords they type, but the entities and the people behind that is a really tricky problem. So we bought a company called MetaWeb that has this sort of database called Freebase of sort of people and places and entities and all the relationships between them. And this is sort of the fruition of a lot of that effort. So I love that you can do a search like Glee, for example, and it will give you stats about, you know, the first episode was May 19th, 2009. You know, Diana Agron plays Quinn Febre. And so you can click around and you can find all this information, and that's very handy by itself.
But isn't that risky, though? Because what if I'm searching for, you know, Glee Happiness or Glee Club, and you right. make it, you're making a decision about what I'm searching for? You could make a mistake.
Absolutely. And so there's a couple things. One is it's on the right-hand side, so you don't, you know, you still see the web results.
Okay.
The other thing is we do try to do a very good job of triggering correctly. So if you type Chipotle, it knows, well, you probably don't need information about Chipotle. You're looking for the website. And so it doesn't trigger for that sort of a situation.
So I get it.
Well,
so
I liked the example of Andromeda, which gives you a disambiguation. It says, well, do you mean the Swedish metal band? Or do you mean the TV show? Or do you mean the galaxy? And then you can right. click and get the appropriate results.
Yeah, and that's one of the strongest things is if you type somebody like Danny Sullivan, we all think about, you know, the guy related to tech and search, but
right.
there's a very famous race car driver named Danny Sullivan.
Right.
And so over on the right-hand side, if you scroll down, you can see, did you mean, you know, the race car driver Danny Sullivan? And then you can click and sort of, you know.
Now, I'm not getting it yet, I
Yeah,
think.
It hasn't quite
so
rolled out.
So not everybody
yet.
Has this. This is not the result I'll be getting in a day or so, right?
That might be the social one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting social search.
Okay, so maybe Barry Schwartz is a guy who's in the SEO space. So there's a search engine optimization guy, but then there's also the psychologist, Barry Schwartz.
Yeah, see, I'm not yet getting it. So it's not completely okay. everywhere, I don't believe.
Yeah, it's starting to roll out, but it'll be rolled out.
It's weird because I don't have it here. It's not by IP address because it's by Google login because I don't have it on my account. But Chad Johnson, our producer, has it on his account.
Yeah.
That's because Matt likes Chad better than us.
Chad seems like a great guy, but typically we'll run these tests. You know, like 1% of people get the experiment before it rolls out.
How does that? How do you do that?
It's a ton of fun. You basically take the cookie, and you can take the cookie modulo 500.
Oh, I get it.
If you happen in with a 3 or whatever, then you get the experiment.
Oh, so.
Is there a way to hack the cookie?
In theory, you could find somebody who had that experiment, and you could take their cookie, or you could keep refreshing your cookies until you happen to land in that experiment.
Yeah. Delete the cookie and
that's
start over.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
There you go.
That would be. I guess that would be. You wouldn't delete the cookie. Wouldn't delete your Google history though.
No.
Okay. Good. There's a tip. there's a good tip. Location, social, knowledge graph. What's next? How well? What are you looking at right now? Not necessarily what Google's going to launch next, but you guys must be experimenting with different ideas about how to make search better. What are some of those ideas? Can you talk about those, or are they secret?
Well, it's always trying to get better understanding either of the user and what they want or what they type when it's ambiguous. How do you disambiguate that? So the thing that a lot of people don't realize is we roll out over 500 changes a year.
Wow.
So typically there are one or two algorithm changes every single day.
Wow.
And so, you know, all the time we're looking for people who are giving suggestions or complaints and we're saying, okay, that's a bad search result. How can we find a way to fix that at the root? A new set of signals that might help.
You know, I remember when I went to this lunch with Larry and Sergey. Larry said something. You can explain it, what it means. He says, I always look at the end of the search.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I went, oh, yes, Larry, that's a good thing to do. And I had no idea.
Well, there's a couple ways you can interpret that. The most common might be, did they find what they wanted? Did they click through and they stayed there for a while? Or did they just sort of...
I got the feeling he was looking at like the bottom of the printouts or something. There was some sort of like, I wish I could recreate what he said because it sounded like he would go into the server room. I mean, this is early days, and he'd go through the printouts and he'd go to the very bottom of the and say, "Oh yeah, here we got to fix this."
Well, we do have a little informal rule around search quality that we call Larry's Law of Search Engines.
Okay.
And Larry's Law is basically, if you dig deep enough and long enough into any query, you will find something broken that you can still fix.
That must be what he meant.
So
that's what he meant.
There's always more improvements.
So he goes to the last page of the search and sees what the last result is, and that will tell you something wrong with the algorithm. Does Larry work on the, you know, PageRank's named after Larry Page, founder of Google, and he's got the patent. By the way, Matt has some at least one patent, right?
Yeah.
For
at least a couple. One on, you know, using history and how things change over time. So not just looking at the current links, but, you know, how that might change over time can also tell you a lot about search quality. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah. So does Larry still get involved in this, or is he now he's so busy running the company, he can't be doing any coding anymore.
He is busy, but, you know, it's sort of interesting. I'm actually technically on vacation. I'm in Hawaii right now.
What? Oh, yeah. Matt. Oh, now, so, tell us.
It was you know, I really wanted to be on the show. It was a ton of fun. But one thing in Longview is Larry was going to meet with a lot of the staff and sort of talk about search quality and talk about the future of search. So he's definitely still thinking hard about how to improve search and you know, what are the different ways that we can make it better.
He pays attention. Wow, that's cool. Well, it's such a great honor to talk to you always. You've been such a good friend of the network, and we just love Matt. Everybody loves
Matt's
you.
Great, yeah. Thank you for taking time out of Hawaii. I mean, mahalo for being on
the
show.
Well, you know what? Thanks to your wife. That's all. I just want to say thank your wife for us.
I will, yeah. She's down at the pool right now, so I think after this, I'll go and, you know, have to buy her some sort of nice drink.
Get her a Mai Tai.
Sai John says he's in Hawaii for 30 days. It's a challenge.
It's a 30-day challenge. How long can I take surf, sun, and fun?
That would be a good challenge to try.
Yeah, I like that one.
I want to go on that one. Matt, anything you want to plug, you want to tell people about, or...
Yeah, the only thing I'd say is we do have this Webmaster Video channel on YouTube. So if you search for Webmaster Video channel, we have 450 videos. Some of them are 8 minutes long talking about how search works. There's one that's 12 seconds long. And so just tons of different things. Anything you want to learn about how search works, we have a Webmaster forum and we have a Webmaster blog because we want people to know how Google works. We want to answer those common questions. There's a few about secret sauce we can't get into, but most of the time we want to let you know, here's how to mark up your site, here's how to write good content, all that stuff.
Instead of spending all that money on SEO, watch these videos, right?
Yeah.
It's all
definitely a good start, yeah.
It's all in there. Matt Cutts, thank you so much. Mahalo.
Thanks for
Aloha.
Thank you for having me.
Meli kaliki maka.
Merry Christmas.
Take care, Matt. Thanks for joining us. Matt Cutts, and thank you all for watching the show. It's so much fun. Every time we do this show, I learn things about people. I get to, my brain expands. We've got a great list of people we're trying to get. If you've got suggestions, you can email Chad at twit.tv or Leo at twit.tv. I'd love to hear your suggestions. We're always looking for new people to talk to.
Got a good lineup coming up, too.
I think I'm pretty excited. Do we know?
Alexander, is it Leung from SoundCloud?
Oh, yeah.
L-J-U-N-G?
Yeah, I think it's Leung, yeah.
Yeah.
He is fantastic. He is, he's in Berlin,
uh-huh.
But SoundCloud is an amazing story.
Oh, I love SoundCloud. Yeah, we actually use it on TNT so that we can make the voicemails from the show available in the show notes.
Oh,
without
brilliant.
Exposing people's phone numbers and stuff
like
that.
We're working on different deals with them. And that has nothing to do with the interview, but we want to use their player. And, you know, Flipboard just added SoundCloud today, I think,
mm-hmm.
to Flipboard so that you can listen to audio. And immediately Robert Scoble starts posting on Spreaker because Spreaker uses – he says, now I can even do a radio show like Leo Laporte. So he's doing from his phone. He's doing a radio show that goes on SoundCloud.
Nice.
That'll be very interesting. That's exciting. That's next week.
That's next week.
Can't wait. We thank you for joining us. A reminder, we do this show 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. Is that right? 12 plus 4, 16 plus 7, 2300.
Daylight savings always messes me up with UTC.
2300. Well, it's 7 now.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Roger McGuinn would be great, and I will. You're right. Thank you, Vic G, in our chat room. That's one of the reasons we watch live. We really get a lot of valuable feedback from the chat room, so we appreciate it. Yes, Twit is on the audio section of Flipboard. We were very happy about that. You can catch a show live and do so. That way we can see you in chat. But if not, don't worry. We make audio and video available always after the fact at twit.tv/TRI. Tom Merritt will be back tomorrow for TNT.
Yep. Actually, I'm off tomorrow.
So am I.
I'm just off. I just happen to be off.
I'm taking the day off. I'm just going to take the day off. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to hang around a little bit and, you know,
relax. What's that box in your hand?
What box? There's no box in my hand. You mean the one that says Diablo 3?
What a coincidence.
Pay no attention to that box. It's Diablo Day tomorrow. Nobody's going to be here, but all the shows will continue. But do catch TNT Tech News Today every Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for your daily dose of tech news with Tom, Iaz, and Sarah, because that's a must-see show. And Tom's actually working on a new show I'm pretty excited about.
We'll talk
about that another time. Iaz is launching a new show June... What are we doing? Oh, he's not. He's gone. June 12th, I think.
12th?
Yeah. I think it's 12th.
Liz says 12th.
Yeah. Going to be on Tuesdays. And that's about it. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation. You mean, what, OS? What am I using?
I mean, I guess you could be using Windows or Ubuntu, all right?
I actually use...
Or some, any kind of Linux.
Oh, what am I using outside? What the case is?
Oh, the case.
It's an Incipio Featherlight case, which is really getting gummy.
It's a ham radio emergency service case.
Yeah. Yes, this is so that I could do emergency services. Whenever,
oh, nice.
Whenever emergency strikes, Ares is there.
Cool.
All right, I got recording going. We're good.
It's time for Triangulation, the show where a big American flag going through it.
It's when you roll that many R's, you have to balance it out.
Do you want to do that again?
Yeah.
You want to turn that triangle? You want to? Okay, here we go.